Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is a beautiful Sunday morning, May the 24th, 2015. And I'm very grateful to be with you on this satsang as we take a look at some interesting questions about my teachings. Some of people read them, listen to them. There's all sorts of ways to be exposed to them, and one of them is through this radio program. And so I get questions about some of the things I'm teaching, and here are three, well, very interesting questions, and I hope that in some way I'm able to help. If you have a question or something I might be able to help you with, you know you can always go to the top of this page here at aspire.org, and you will see contact. Just click on it and send me an email. And if you don't want me to use your name or where you live, that is fine. Just let me know. I want to remind you once again that these programs are here strictly from the generosity of our mystery donor who has made them available, and to the people who are sponsors of this radio program through their sponsorship. And you are hearing this only due to their generosity. And I want to thank them all, and I hope that you will be generous too and join us and help us in this endeavor. Your donations go far further than just this radio program or this satsang. It goes not only all over the internet, but it goes to help me sustain our YouTube television programs and make new ones. All right, let's get into the first question. You say the human in your radio programs cannot become the divine. What are we to do then with the human? What is it all about, Ryan? Ryan, the human is the vehicle that we live with here. It is what we do. It is the way we are. But it is not the totality of us. And when a person realizes that there is a certain mischief to the human experience, and that they do not have to live in that mischief, they do not have to be subjected to its cruelty and aggravations, then something very different occurs within us. Something of the other shore begins to show up. And in that, we start to realize through meditation, compassion, living meditatively, playfully, lovingly, what it's really all about in our life. And what do I mean what it is really all about? What our life is really all about. We tend to misunderstand the meaning of our life, and we do it through very strange methods. We put money and passion and people and objects and things ahead of what we really are. The human is a collector of mischief, a hoarder of mischief. It is always looking for, well, something to amuse it. It's typically based in urges and fears and hates, and it typically has a lot of emotionality connected to it. It is constantly, constantly running from death over and over and over again. It can't awaken to anything other than itself. You can program it to do different things. I guess you could say you could program it to be successful in this world, learning how to manipulate others and harm them and yourself. That's what most people do. But there is more to our life than all of that. And it takes, in my opinion, many, many, many lifetimes and many life experiences before a person really understands what that all means and why we do what we do. You say in your email, you say the human can't become the divine. What are we to do with the human then? Use it as a vehicle. It is here. It is like driving a car. You can drive it and be reckless with it, or you can drive it to transport you, to bring you to this, that, and the other in the world. It's transportation. And there's many things to learn from it. If you learn from it, if you still have the capacity to learn from it, then you can achieve something quite spectacular. Most people are not of that ilk. They don't do that. They're trying to perfect the human. And this is just impossible. It definitely causes a great deal of pain and sorrow in our life when we do things like that. You can spend your whole life trying to perfect it, but I'll tell you something. We live in a world of impermanence. It is strictly impermanence. That's what it's all about. And no matter how you perfect the human, it will never be the divine. And you can try to perfect it all you want, but impermanence rules supreme in this world. Impermanence is what life is all about. And so with impermanence comes change. You're going to grow older. You're going to have the difficulties of being old. Hell, you're going to have the difficulties of being young. It's all the same. All of this keeps going and going and going and going. And it doesn't change because I want it to or I say it will. It doesn't change. It continues on as it is, the way it is, for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Now, does that depress you? It shouldn't. It should awaken you. It should give you a sense of freedom. Love your human. Take care of it. Do the best you can with it. Rest it. Feed it well. Not much well. Let it change. It's going to change and morph into different forms and figures, no matter what you do. Now, you can go and have plastic surgery and try to turn back the clock, but it isn't going to change anything. This vanity and pride that we have, this hubris of thinking that we have to be young-looking or whatever is insane. Just insane. You're going to get old. You're going to get sick. And you're going to die. These are things that are a part of the human experience, a part of that lovely thing that we call impermanence. But if you cultivate the inwardness of you through love, if you cultivate it through kindness, if you cultivate it through compassion, if you can feel compassion beyond the emotionality that you and I basically struggle with, you will come to a place of authentic love. And that love will shine through every pore of your being. I look at people differently now than I used to when I was younger. In the human, I see the configuring and the conforming of many, many different places that people have been in their life. In young people, I see the potential for great goodness in their life. I also see in them a great potential to just shrug off the goodness. They think in terms, the millennium generation thinks in terms of profit and loss. And this is not a good thing. Believe me, it is not. And while they are very skeptical of religion, which I agree with, they are very harsh in their judgments about what they think the world is. Their attitude, get what they can, as quickly as they can. We had these attitudes, I think, when we were younger in a different way. Things are changing constantly. This is the human. Now, a lot of people want to believe we're evolving. The only evolution there can be in a lifetime is spiritual. Spiritual is not religious. So, Ryan, spiritual, although I hate to use that term because it's been clobbered and defiled, the spiritual is that which the human can't touch, the human can't think, the human can't control. It is that which lives within us as unconscionable loving kindness. It is something that is inexplicable. And a spiritual practice is about the inexplicable, about living in the inexplicable. I don't ever feel like I have to report to Gregory, my human, what I'm finding through the divine. I never present it to him. If you do, you will find it will all be lost. Everything will be lost that is meaningful. Everything. The human can't be the divine because that's not what it was made for. The human can contain the divine within it. Like a seed in an apple, it can contain it. But it is not it itself. You will have to do your own discovery work. And I tell you, without any kind of reservation, it will oppose your practice, your effort to self-realize. It'll help you in the discovery process. It can, and it will. It will like doing all that because it doesn't think that the spiritual has any harm to do to it. But when a person does their research, that's one thing. But when they start to take their practice or take a practice and start incorporating it, like, well, meditating every day, being extremely generous and unconscionably kind, forgiving, then the human wells up. It feels threatened because it's emotional, and it will try to do everything it can to stop your progress. That's the way it works. That's where it takes a great effort, a great love in you to overcome. Enough of me, Ryan. I hope I helped you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? I struggle with this with my students over and over and over to nauseam. They just can't understand it. They just can't get it. They won't get it. That all of this practice, everything that we're doing, isn't going to make the human better. You can't bring human values into loving hearts. You can't. If you do, it becomes emotionality. It's a long story. Got to get to the next question from Samuel. And he doesn't tell me where he listens. What is the meaning of the word consciousness? Well, Samuel, you're one of the very rare people. Most people don't ask that. Well, you can look it up in the dictionary. It says it's a state of being awake and aware of one's surroundings, the awareness of perception of something, and the fact of awareness by the mind of itself and the world that it lives in. But I disagree with all of that. It is much more than that. If you want a real daily whopper, look up the word good. That'll change your life. We did that in class the other night, in meditation class, and it was so ambiguous, it's unbelievable. Consciousness. It is the state of being awake, hence aware, not of your surroundings, but simply aware. Aware of everything that is, just is. Consciousness is when I drop Gregory, his values, his beliefs, his theories. When I drop his emotionality, and I just look very deep, penetrating beyond the ideas and ideals of thoughts and beliefs. It is to go, so to speak, naked into the sun, as it were, and to allow an awakening to occur. The awakening of kindness. The awakening of the indefinable, unspeakable. And it is found, Samuel, in meditation, and only in meditation. It is not found in thoughts that conflict with each other, thoughts about what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad. It's not found in any of that. It is found in that place inside of us that is what I call the isness of us, the ultimate isness of us. This isness is the state of our being. It, consciousness, when allowed, will change the way I operate. I will no longer be thinking in terms of what is good or bad or right and wrong. I will no longer be thinking in terms of what I want, what I don't want. You see, when you're in everyday mind, Samuel, what we definitely are doing is thinking, well, I like this, I don't like that. This is better, this is lesser. In consciousness, that all goes away. Everything stands on its own, and you can see everything for the way it is, as it is, and its place in this lifetime. And if you really get good at it, its place in the universe. It's to sit not in wonder or in why, because in consciousness there is no wonder and there is no why. There is just consciousness. And in that, meditation grows. In that, love is allowed to grow. In love, awareness grows. Consciousness becomes everything. It becomes not a quality. It becomes the state of your life, the state of your being. And if you can live in that, if you can do that, if you are willing of that to practice it over and over through meditation, you will find an authentic change beginning to emerge in you. Now, the mind does not become our enemy. The mind becomes a different mind. What we call in Zen, no mind. A mind that is no longer seeking to pit one thought against another, Samuel. A mind that isn't looking for what's right over what's wrong, what's good over what's bad. A mind that is simply aware and sees everything in the light of a bigger picture, which sustains consciousness. Then pretty soon, consciousness sustains consciousness in us. And we apply different, shall we say, energies to our life, rather than old energies of fear and hate, and hence are able to bring new insight, new answers to old problems. But very few people are willing of this. It takes practice and patience. And there's sacrifice involved in achieving consciousness. I have to be willing to sacrifice my selfishness, my pride, my hubris, my anger, and my fear. And you say, well, that doesn't sound like a great sacrifice. But it is. Because so much of us is based in that. So much of our life, so much of our self-worth is based in fear and hate and anger. We have to hate the right things. We have to fear the right things. There are bad people, and then there are good people. And that's the way we live our life, bad and good, right and wrong. And we never see into the nature of any given situation due to that. You ask the meaning of consciousness. It's more than cognition. It is a quality of being aware. And it's huge. And its blessings are many. It is a noble effort to live one's life to achieve consciousness. And Samuel, I hope that you do. And I'm honored that you gave me this question. Thank you. And please forgive me. Namaste. The last question comes from Linda. And she listens to us in Florida. What I fear, I find out, fears me. Is that true? Linda. I'm not sure, Linda. I'm not sure. What do you fear? I'll tell you, if you fear authentic love, the only thing that will fear authentic love is my emotionality. So I'm not really sure what you mean. You say, what I fear, I find out, fears me. No, if it's something you deeply fear, how could it fear you? It could consume you, can overcome you, but maybe I'm misunderstanding the question, but I can only relate to it according to me, so please forgive me again. Fear has no place in us except through our emotionality. And every time I feed my fear through any kind of emotional gratification, any kind, and I take it to heart, my gratification, that is, I have lost the way very quickly. I've lost my spirit. I've lost my composure. I've lost kindness. I've lost it all. What can I fear but fear itself? I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of pain. I'm afraid of rejection. All these things the human is afraid of, all of them. And no matter what I do, the fear is going to be in the human at all times. So when you say, what I fear, I find fears me, I could interpret that in many different ways. I could say, what I fear, I find out, is the fear of me. And then I could relate to that. And all of us could understand that one. The effort is to not fight fear with fear, but to see fear for what it is. What am I afraid of? What am I deeply afraid of? And then to sit with that fear as long as I possibly can, until it starts to dissipate, and it will, under the scope, as it were, of your consciousness, under the compassion of your forgiveness. If you sit with what you fear long enough, you'll find it starts to diminish very quickly. I've found this to be very true in my own life. Very, very true. If you understand this, you understand the nature of your heart. You understand the being of you, the essence of you, that you're a very powerful and loving being. So don't be motivated by fear, Linda. And don't think it fears you, because now you're egging it on, if I'm hearing you correctly. And if I'm not, again, you know, forgive me. But it is only my fear and the things that I am afraid of that cause me the suffering I go through in the course of my lifetime. Just think about it. Let love live you. That's the big one. And if you do let love live you, much will happen. Much beauty. Much kindness. Thank you for your beautiful question, Linda. And again, please forgive me, eh? Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, or something I might be of service to you in, please come to this website here at aspire.org. Look at the top of the page. You will see contact. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Have a wonderful day. And please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.